So this week we are going to talk about something that actually happened today. We were going to have the show yesterday evening and call it Alphabet Spook, but that didn't happen for a couple reasons. But we're here today and we're glad actually, because the most notable story of the last, I don't know, since made by Google, probably. It's probably the most highest profile story about Google since October 15th. Google announced today that they are acquiring Fitbit.
Yeah,
for those who don't know. So this wearables company has been around for a while.
Yes.
They IPO'd what, like 5 years ago or something like that. And they IPO'd with an initial stock price of $35 or something. And I don't know. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was like they debuted at $35 a share and it went up to like 50. And then most recently, like a week ago, they were around like three. So, public investors not exactly happy with the performance of that. And it seemed like there was probably only one way out of this situation, and that was being acquired by a big firm. And it seems like there were a couple firms interested, one of which was Facebook, which apparently was only interested in willing to pay about half of what Google ended up being willing to pay, according to reports. They were willing to pay one Instagram for Fitbit, whereas Google really, really came to the table with an amazing offer of two Instagrams. And so, yeah, today Google announced that they picked up Fitbit. And so now we are very, I guess, focused now on tracking everything related to Fitbit, because now suddenly this entire ecosystem of hardware and software is all suddenly Google software and hardware. So lot of stories.
Yeah. So I've been a Fitbit user for the past 5 years. Yes, 5 years. I've had like so many products of theirs for the past 5 years, and I'm very curious to see how it becomes googly. Okay, so the details we do know right now are this deal was announced by Rick Ostro, head of hardware. So it looks to be going into the Made by Google division.
2.1 billion.
Which we should preface this entire discussion by regulators might be putting on some very strict conditions on Google's acquisition of Fitbit. That's the regulatory anti-monopoly atmosphere we're in right now will definitely dictate that. And while the analysts I've read so far say there should be no indication of the deal being blocked because of Google's lack of presence in fitness right now, regulators will be putting strict conditions on this deal. Yeah, and one sign of that was Rick Ostro saying Fitbit health data will not be used for Google ads. So Google realizes this and they're trying to tackle it head on.
Right. They're anticipating some pushback from their like regulatory bodies. I think one thing to note here is that it's arguable how many players there really are in the health space, or how many players have significant hordes of health data. But Fitbit is, of course, one of those companies. And now it seems like this acquisition is going to create a little bit of a duopoly, according to some analysts that I'm reading. And that duopoly obviously is going to be Google and Apple. Which is
assuming Google can execute. So
right. And either way, they're picking up the data. Google just, had the disclaimer that data is not going to be used for advertising, which is the main concern. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of sentiment. I'm actually really surprised still to this day. The amount of Google is a big data monster kind of sentiment that I'm reading. Even if you click on Twitter trending, you know, Fitbit, Google buying Fitbit was one of the top trending topics today. And you click on that trending topic and the top tweet with like 500 you know, likes is someone tweeting about telling their friend that Google suddenly has all of their health data. Okay. And it's like, there's definitely a lot of paranoia about that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really just, you know, I think the tweet specifically gave the idea that, you know, you're going to be advertised now based on your health data, but Google specifically and explicitly said that that's not going to be the case. But then again, Google and the companies that they've acquired have said some things in the past that have ended up not being true. And I don't know if this is going to be one of those cases, but I think of Nest, which a big part of that acquisition was, you know, Tony Fadell coming out and saying, you know, Nest is never going to be part of Google proper. We're not going to share data with Google. We're going to be an entirely separate company. We're going to keep things siloed off. And there was even points where Google was kind of pitching that as, you know, one of the nice things about Nest products. Even when they started to kind of work together and we started to see some of the, I guess, facial recognition technology that Google was working on being integrated with Nest Cam IQ, they were very explicit in saying, you know, we're not sharing data. And, you know, anyone that's following Google, has been following Google, knows exactly how that worked out, which is, yeah, Nest is Google now. And so none of those barriers and none of those silos exist. And so I guess that's kind of the overarching concern. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, that is the overarching concern. But yeah, so that's like the privacy angle, which is obviously very important in this day and age again. The second is, what are they going to do with Fitbit?
Yeah, and I mean, I think here's an interesting thing. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Wear OS.
Yes.
So today's announcement, alongside today's announcement, they had a brief mention of how, what's the quote, that this is going to give new opportunities to Wear OS or something vague like that. Actually, and then they had
a separate blog post,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. What did that one say?
The second blog post was investing in the Wear OS ecosystem. The first blog post is titled Helping More People with Wearables, Google to Acquire Fitbit. And again, the second was investing in the Wear OS ecosystem, written by Samir Smart, who is in charge of Android, Google Play, and Wear OS. And basically, the theme of this one was we started 5 years ago. It was early days, and I think the telling quote right now is, we're really proud of the progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it's got to be the most disingenuous thing that Samir's ever written. I don't know.
Yeah.
Progress is not the word I would use. No, but
scale is
the sure. I mean, yeah, be proud of the scale. Sure. I mean, there's plenty of you know, fashion brands that are pumping out really awful smartwatches. There's lots of those. Sure, sure.
The OEM model is what they want in the end. Sure. And yeah, they got that.
Sure. And I guess here's the thing: is that with this announcement, would you agree that kind of the undertone is that this Fitbit, so they never said this really explicitly in the Fitbit and acquisition blog post, they kind of briefly alluded to Wear OS in the, like, vaguely. But then the second blog post, which it doesn't have Fitbit in the headline, by the way, it's really kind of more so Google saying, Hey everyone, we still care about Wear OS, you know, and they're just using, it seems to me like they're kind of using the opportunity of this acquisition to send that message, even though, to me, it doesn't seem like they really have much to do with each other. That's my opinion. And so I guess that's maybe the main misconception that we're seeing on social media right now is that Fitbit acquisition equals Google is now suddenly building a Pixel Watch, and that Pixel Watch is going to have a revamped version of Wear OS, and it's going to have better Qualcomm chips, and it's going to have, you know, Fitbit's fitness kind of intelligence or software and expertise built in, and it's going to have maybe some of Fitbit's you know, on the companion app side thing, maybe those integrations, and that's kind of just the amalgamation of things that people imagine with this acquisition. And one, I don't think that I guess imaginary future product that some people probably think is going to launch next year, which it won't.
No.
I don't think that that future product really has is really an exciting idea. And two, I don't know if that really is even in any way like a proper extrapolation of what's going on today. Would you agree with those things?
Yeah, it really is confused. Like reading, so this is, I'm quoting Rick Astor here. By working closely with Fitbit's team of experts and bringing together the best AI software and hardware, we can help spur innovation in the wearables and build products to benefit even more people around the world. To me, that sounds like Fitbit staying as being a standalone company. That's what it reads to me. It reads to me as being like a Fitbit being pre-Nest, being moved into made by Google. Fitbit has a CEO. They have a leadership team that I think would contradict the centralization that Google is trying to do with made by Google.
Maybe. And I think too that we will, I mean, I really do think that we will look back on this whole situation in a year or two, and we will see that it worked out, that there will be some parallels to the Nest situation. I don't think that Google is going to retire or revamp the Fitbit brand anytime in the next 12 months. I really don't. I think that, I mean, we especially know, I mean, people are going to be buying Fitbits, you know, next week, next month, because Christmas is coming up and the holidays are coming up, and you know, it's going to be those things sell every year. Obviously, they're struggling because, you know, for a variety of reasons, primarily a little device that starts with A and ends with pull watch. But you know, like it's going to stay its own thing for the foreseeable future. I mean, this is just my guess, but I think that the most, and maybe you have some thoughts on this, I think the most likely implication in the near term, and by the near term, I mean 24 month kind of window, is not any kind of Google first party product that takes advantage of Fitbit's patents or IP or talent, but rather just a new Fitbit that has lots of software, Google software tie-ins. That seems like, I mean, one of the things that I think Fitbit has, I don't know, I think one of the biggest opportunities that Fitbit has not been able to take advantage of. I mean, I think there's so many things that Google is doing software-wise that could be directly integrated into all of Fitbit's existing platforms and hardware. And I think that that may be, I mean, I really do think, I don't know what's on Fitbit's roadmap. Maybe Fitbit was so close to calling it quits that they don't even have a roadmap. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's the case. But if Fitbit has a Versa 3 that they've been working on, I could see a Versa 3 launch next spring or something. When did the Versa 2 launch? I don't even know. I haven't been following this yet. You know, it's this year for sure, but I don't remember. They haven't been a Google company up to now, so I haven't been following them. But, you know, let's say a Versa 3 launches next spring. I can almost guarantee you that it's not going to launch with Amazon Alexa Versa 2 launched with Alexa built in. It's all over the landing page that, you know, it's got, you know, all the Alexa integrations, and it's just going to, I think that we'll see that. We'll see the next Fitbit smartwatch. That's not, you know, it's not a Wear OS watch. It'll just be Fitbit based on Fitbit's platform, which I have to say, that platform is not a powerful one. It is not one that has been adopted by any third parties, obviously, because that's not an option. But, you know, and obviously there's not much third party buy-in from developers, but Fitbit products in general have been well reviewed, a lot of them, especially like Fitbit Blaze and Fitbit Versa. Like some of them have you know, owners and buyers that actually adore them as products. That's not to say that they're like, in, I guess, better than all the Wear OS offerings. But, you know, when a product is reviewed and considered a good product or a bad product, that a lot of times consumers are not considering everything out there when they're doing that. They either use the product for a few months and like it, or they use it for a few months and don't like it. And based on the current Amazon reviews, it seems like a lot of people really like Fitbit products. All of that to say, I think it would be sensical that Fitbit will just continue on with what their roadmap would be for the near term, and they'll just be tightly integrated with Google. Does that seem sensical to you?
I'm not going to say yes or no, because this is still, it's, I don't know, this entire deal, like, I did write a piece advocating that Google should buy Fitbit, but at the same time, I think the valuable part of Fitbit is the user, is the, I think, Fitbit said they had either 28 or 26 million active users today. The value is in the users, that that fitness social network that the Fitbit app has. That's one. Two is the fitness data. Three is, like, I guess, analytics and stuff. I don't think that the value, there's real value in of any of Fitbit's actual hardware products to date. And the idea of Fitbit coexisting within made by Google honestly doesn't make sense to me. I think it's Google has a better track record of making hardware when they start from the ground up, not when they do acqui-hires, not when they bring things in and just, like, update it with Google services. I think the real value is when they build it up right from the ground. And I think the biggest complication here to that plan, to Fitbit staying in the next 12, 24 months, just to keep on their roadmap at Google services, is the fact that Google has an entire health division that they're spinning up right now with its own reader, with its own engineers, with its own scientists. And there was absolutely no mention of that today. So
sure, because they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk up Wear OS. They want to talk up what people consider to be, like, I think there's two layers of what happened today. I think that there's the reality of what's happening, which we don't know for a fact, and we can only just guess, really, and we're speculating right now. But then there's the angle of, like, Google knew that they had a PR opportunity today. So I think obviously some of what they said is true. And I mean, I'm sure all of what they said is technically true. But then there's the other layer of it, is what message was sent today. And I think that the message they sent today was, we're acquiring Fitbit. Secondarily, the secondary message they wanted to send was, this platform, which everyone talks about, which is dying, is not dead. Like, that's the other message they wanted to get across. And I don't think that necessarily has to have anything to do with Fitbit, even though both of those messages came at the same time. At least that's my opinion. I do think too that, does Google want to dip its toes in wearables? Does Google want to just, like, if Google could have a Fitbit Versa 3 tomorrow and launch one tomorrow, and it was just a Versa 3, would they want that? And I think that the answer is yes, just because Google wants to be playing in this space, period. Whether that's being a perfect contender to the Apple Watch or not, I think Google wants to be playing in this space. And so I guess that's why I think they would do that. Also, the benefit of that too, being under the Fitbit brand and not immediately bringing it under the Rick Osterloh, I mean, the company and the leadership above Fitbit may be Rick Osterloh. I'm not saying that. I'm saying immediately bringing it under the brand of Made by Google, you know, that would send, if they brought Fitbit and put it on the Google store, right at their next to Nest devices, you know, that would send a message that this is Google, the Google, Google proper's attempts at taking on Apple, or attempt at taking on the wearable, or tackling the wearable space. Whereas if Fitbit, you know, the existing brand that seems independent, just like Nest for a long time, even Nest under Google before Google brought in the branding, right? And brought that all under the same window, which was this past summer, even the Nest that was still, you know, under, they were doing that. They were selling products as Nest products without any Google, you know, Made by Google, any of this kind of Osterloh-y stuff at all, even though even at that time, Rick was still overseeing it. So I don't know. Maybe it'd only be 6 months. Maybe it'd be 12 months. I don't know. But to me, it seems like, I mean, we know for a fact tomorrow, when we wake up tomorrow, we will walk to Best Buy and you'll be able to buy a Fitbit Versa 2, and you will not be buying a Fitbit product. You will be buying a Google product. That will be true. And so I don't see why, if there is a Fitbit Versa 3 in the roadmap, I don't see why Google wouldn't just ship it. And I don't think that is going to create a, I think the benefit is, I don't think that's going to create a narrative of, oh, this is like, I don't think it's suddenly going to be pit up against the Apple Watch, you know, as this is the Google Watch and this is the Apple Watch. I think it'll still be kind of, you know, to Google's benefit. I don't think it will be portrayed as, you know, the proper Google smartwatch, the Google alternative. I think it would just be, oh yeah, Fitbit's still doing this thing, and it just so happens that Google is the owner of it at the moment, and it just so happens that it's all under Rick Osterloh. You know, it's like the public doesn't need to know about all that. So I don't know. I digress. It seems to me, if I were to guess, just my guess. What's your guess? What do you think? What do you think is going to happen in 12 months? Do you think that it's just going to go dark, quiet until Google launches something that's actually a true competitor? What's your take?
I honestly really don't know. There's so many things about this that doesn't make sense in the context of Google literally having another division, Google Health, that could be doing the exact same thing. The parallel efforts do not make sense. And
I would bet that the health team that's fledgling right now and being built is going to be more involved with the newly acquired Fitbit team than the Wear OS team will be at first.
Absolutely.
That's my guess.
Absolutely. On the, yeah, the Wear OS point throws in a wrench to all of this. But the value of Fitbit, again, going back to that, is...
Sure.
Compared... Okay,
Yeah, how this all like ends up is a different conversation. I'm talking about what's it going to look like next month or next, you know, two months. You know, seems like it's going to be status quo for Fitbit.
Oh yeah, it's going to be status quo, and I don't know how successful that will make it under Google, but that's a
aggression. I don't think it's going to change.
Yeah, but
if they did launch, you know, whatever it is that's next in their roadmap, Fitbit Blaze 2 or whatever, and it has all these Google integrations, that might be a slightly different outcome in terms of sales. It won't be a night and day, you know, it won't save the Fitbit brand or anything, but
the experience would be good. Does Google want that experience on a watch that they haven't end-to-end controlled? But is this Mercurio Google made by Google that has design language?
And I don't know. It feels like kind of a potentially like a, you know, they acquired Nest and the Nest thermostat, and then they launched the Nest thermostat E, and it was, you know, it's like, it's,
yeah, but those feel like Nest products. Those still feel
right, and these would feel like Fitbit products.
Yeah,
you know, the Nest thermostat when it was first acquired by Google didn't have as deeply. Nowhere near as deeply knit connected to Google's apps and software and services than compared to today. So I don't know.
So yeah, this is the whole smartwatch question, which I honestly thought Google would just like not even touch upon Wear OS, and, like not even mention it.
I don't get it. That doesn't make sense to me.
That, so to table that for just a second, to me, wearables, there's a big distinction between smartwatches and fitness trackers. I think the immense value is in fitness trackers, because at the end of the day, the silicon problem still exists. There's no, well, we'll see what Qualcomm does, but today, you cannot make a smartwatch experience that rivals the Apple Watch just because the underlying hardware isn't good enough. But you can do quite a bit with basic fitness trackers. And honestly, when I wrote my Hey Google, Fitbit is up for sale piece, it was basically I thought that they would just make a fitness tracker.
I think that might be a realistic idea of what happened.
But then they mentioned Wear OS.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Just forget it. I think that was literally just a PR stunt. At least I don't know. Obviously, so that was just that's what design. It like to me.
So that was purely to make sure that the conversation today wasn't Wear OS is dead, right?
Right.
That's the reason they did it.
Yes, it was we're buying Fitbit, and to counteract the definite or the inevitable the angle was would obviously be, you know, if they didn't talk about Wear OS at all, it was just going to be Google's ditching Wear OS, and they're going to try this now. They're going to try to rebirth Fitbit under their own brand, right? Like,
yeah,
that would be the narrative. And so not only does talking about Wear OS negate that potential take, it also creates a positive. It gave Wear OS its very first positive news cycle in years, right?
It could get better. Yeah.
But and so Google had to do that. They had to. Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense. And it sends a lot of really confusing signals. And I think if we look back 2 years from now on today, we will see that it was a very confusing signal. And I think that in maybe 30 years, Google will eventually launch a decent smartwatch and it'll be running Wear OS or something, or some very morphed, you know,
a very cynical take is that
evolution of it.
Like two versions of Wear OS from now, there will be a Fitbit app, and that is it.
Yeah, Google also had to send that message for their partners, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, especially Fossil, you know, and like all of those brands that have been building Wear OS watches forever. How does it look for them when Google picks up buys essentially their competitor that doesn't run the same platform? Like it runs an entirely different operating system, and that looks really bad. And the only way you can get around that is by twisting today's news to look like a Wear OS story, and it's not. It's just not. And that's I don't think it is. And I'm sure there's someone inside Google or something that will hear about I don't think I'm that important, but you know, if someone in Google heard what I'm saying right now, they would say, he's missing the nuances of this, and you know, he's misinterpreting or misportraying. And maybe I am, but that's as best as I can do given the data that I have. So yeah, I think that the most likely scenario is that we'll see a fitness tracker or a watch from Fitbit. Yeah, imagine a Fitbit fitness tracker. Well, okay, let's forget the smartwatches. Let's just take one of those more basic Fitbit fitness trackers.
Uh-huh.
What you've got on, combine that with this rumored Google Coach AI-powered health coach thing, you know, and the rest of Google's software, and you've got a compelling fitness product, I think.
Yes.
And Google can launch that without even touching the smartwatch narrative, right?
As they should.
And that's what I think they will do. That if I were to guess right now what's going to happen in the next 12 months, that's what I think is going to happen. We'll see a fitness band thing with a bunch of Google software and AI and all that jazz.
Okay.
Google Assistant branding, and it'll launch at Made by Google 2020.
So why did Google buy Fitbit?
I mean, there's definitely side benefits to it, right? I mean, Fitbit, one was cheap. It only costs 2 Instagrams. That's for Google, that's pennies. There's tons of IP. There's the brand, which they can leverage or not. They can, you know, they have all the talent. That's a big part of this acquisition. Google needs poor wearables talent if they want to ever be competitive in this space. And Fitbit, for better or for worse, had a lot of it. So I don't know. And the health data. So, I mean, the acquisition makes sense, I think, broadly, but I don't think you can put it in the Wear OS narrative. They're not directly compatible with one another. They may be 5 years from now, and we'll maybe be able to see the ways in which this acquisition affected that the Wear OS evolution of things, and maybe Google's first party smartwatch. But today, it doesn't seem like it seems tangential at best. At least that's my feeling.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I hope it turns out well. I really do, but. They're not starting on a very good note, are they? Did corporate interest compel them to talk about Wear OS? Is that
that sounds really conspiratorial or cynical? But I think there is a reality to the way they had to portray. I mean, it's PR. They had to portray this in a certain way. and connecting it vaguely to this idea of we're still investing in Wear OS, which is probably true. They're not lying. I don't think that Google's lying. I just think that the way they portrayed it was very intentional. And I think that the way they portrayed it is not, it doesn't reflect the reality of the deal, I don't think, very well.
In the way that Google isn't lying, but sure, that they are still working on Wear OS, but are they, do they have the right idea? Are they going in the right direction?
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation for another show.
Yeah.
I don't know. For all intents and purposes, I mean, okay, given, I have to do this because everyone else, if I don't say this, everyone's going to think that I'm some Apple fanboy. But Wear OS watches, I don't think are as awful as they're talked about. I don't think they're as awful as the language we use to describe it, because the language we use to describe it is not reviewing a product in a bubble. If you look up on, you know, Amazon Fossil smartwatches or whatever, and you read reviews, you'll read reviews from people who are like, oh yeah, this thing was a couple hundred bucks. It's a really nice smartwatch. It works really great with my Pixel. You know, like it works. Wear OS works.
Yes.
So when we talk about Wear OS being awful or dying, we're talking about it dying because it's not growing and it's not getting better. If it's not growing and it's not getting better, and there's no trajectory for Google as a company that seemingly wants to go up against Apple in hardware, and they seemingly want to take on the behemoths, and they seemingly want to create a hardware ecosystem that people will want to buy into. If the trajectory for Wear OS is not approaching that end goal, then it's dying. And it's stagnant. And if something's stagnant, and it's dying, you know, like it took 5 years for the Apple Watch to get to where it was. And it took 5 years of constant investment and reinvestment. And Google has seemingly kind of just put Wear OS on the back burner for a while, and at worst, and they've just let it stagnate, and at best. So I don't know that I think that we have to be really clear that the products themselves are not the absolute trash worst thing, and they may be even better than Fitbit smartwatches, sure. But I think whenever people talk about Wear OS sucking and Wear OS dying, we're talking about it in that context, the context of Google's not taking any clear steps to building a consumer smartwatch that anyone would want to really, or anyone would want to buy, or that could go anywhere near competing with the Apple Watch. So that's my feeling on it. And it also is, there also are very real kind of issues. Like, that's undeniable. There are issues and fallbacks with Wear OS as a platform and as an operating system, as a fork of an operating system. It has issues. So yeah, I just wanted to give that disclaimer, but I don't know.
We'll
see where it goes.
Yeah. And again, like, this really does feel like Google doing two of every single product. And so we know they tried making a smartwatch and it didn't work out. But again, the question is, have they tried, are they actively working on the fitness tracker? And I feel like the answer to that should be yes. I think that.
Yeah, that's another thing, is that the biggest reason that the Apple Watch is so praised is for its extremely, extremely well built and robust fitness features. It's by far the best fitness device you can buy. It's like not even close. And all these Fossil smartwatches are not good hardware for fitness. They don't have lots of options like silicone bands or whatever for fitness on that side of things. Like, the form factor is usually not great for fitness. They're usually mocking or trying to, you know, mimic traditional smartwatches and make something fashionable, right? They're not making a kind of all-purpose device. And obviously the software on the software side of things is nowhere close to what Apple's built out. So that's kind of the one way that maybe you can picture this Fitbit watch acquisition having anything to do with Wear OS, which is Wear OS has some gaping holes. The biggest of those is its fitness features and functionality and hardware and everything else. And also Fitbit's strength in those things, right? So that's the dichotomy you can see, is that Google sucks in this area and Fitbit happens to be strong in this area. So vaguely, that's kind of a connection here between Wear OS and Fitbit, but there's no clear way in which Fitbit's acquisition can actually change that for Wear OS.
Which makes this, like, I think that what the take, my takeaway of the day is, I think Google could have done this. Okay, I'm talking about going back to the idea of a fitness tracker. I think Google could have made and released the fitness tracker by themselves. And I guess my outlook for what happens to Fitbit is that Google just is taking that user base, that existing user base, and any health data, and that's how they're going to improve their own watch. I don't know how Fitbit's future products.
I think that's a valid prediction. So basically, your prediction is Google is going to launch a Fitbit-esque fitness tracker and not enter the smartwatch space yet, and they're going to use the acquisition of Fitbit to do that. I think that's a perfectly valid prediction. My guess is that they will just truck on with the Fitbit brand so that they can do that, but without it being part of the made by Google narrative. That's, I mean, so we have similar kind of, I think.
Yeah, like, but
I think that they're going to keep Fitbit around for a while.
You can make both a smartwatch and a fitness tracker. You can. And yes, for different people.
Right. At the same time, though, I have to say that part of the reason the Apple Watch is so compelling is that it is so many things at once.
Yes.
And, you know, I think there will reach a point where it's like, you know, it's like, why would I buy a $100 device? And if it's so limited, right? If it's so limited. But I think the counterpoint to that is, I think there's a big population of people that don't really want a second screen in their life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm kind of finding that I'm one of those. Even as much as I praise the Apple Watch, I primarily use the Apple Watch not as a second screen for my smartphone, but as something to wear to get away from my smartphone. That's just me. And I know that I don't represent most people, but in my case, a fitness tracker would work for me, because I'm not trying to use a smartwatch to double my screen interaction time and double my productivity or something like that. I'm not saving any minutes by flicking my wrist up to check notifications versus take my phone in my pocket or whatever, you know? So anyways, I think we've gone down the rabbit hole on this a little bit. And we should probably talk about some other things before our time's up.
Yes.
So I can't think of any good segue for this, but let's talk about something else that happened this week, which was RCS, which this is crazy. I mean, a lot of things happened with RCS, right?
Yeah.
First, I guess we could start off the week with this. The carriers came out, the four major carriers in the United States, came out and said, hey, we're doing RCS together and we're going to launch a separate app for it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of...
apps are bad.
And they came out and did this with absolutely no mention of Google, the company that has tried for the last 2 years to push RCS to the forefront. What do you think that means?
That there's no mention of Google?
Yeah, why are they suddenly doing this and they don't want to have anything to do with Google, and they have this I guess RCS, what is it called? I forgot, but it's like some kind of regulatory organization or something
that's a
partnership organization that's going to oversee all of this.
They want,
are people reading into that too much, or do you think there's actually something there?
I think there's something there. I think carriers want control. Okay, if RCS wasn't open, if it wasn't by its nature already an open standard, I'm sure they would have no qualms about making sure Google can't access it, about making sure that they're the ones responsible for the end-to-end experience, like carriers love to do. So so yes, it will work with Google in some capacity, but they're perfectly content keeping people in to their own app, to their own service, and do whatever they do with a messaging service. Which is a hellish future.
Yeah, so one of the other crazy things that happened this week, besides the carriers announcing that they're going to be doing RCS sometime next year and finally totally actually doing it, is that Google somehow left a door open for literally anyone to enable RCS on their Android phone in the Messages app. Which is an interesting kind of development. And what's the status on that? Like, so we obviously wrote this article about it, and it got
on Saturday morning,
ton of page views, and we're pretty sure that we sent 250,000 people or more to enable this on their Android phone.
Yeah.
Sorry, Google, about that. But yeah, so and it's still working for most people.
Yes. So last night there's a bit of a hiccup where RCS disappeared for a lot of OnePlus owners, for some Pixel, Samsung owners. But as of today, everything looks to be back and running. So no idea what happened last night. We have no idea who fixed it today. So, but yeah, the RCS trick is still there, and people can still experience it without the carrier interference.
So this is basically what this trick allows you to do, is enable RCS on your Android phone, the RCS kind of protocol, but it's running on Google's own servers. So yes. I guess when RCS officially launches next year and all the carriers are fully supporting it, there will be multiple servers beyond just Google's that will be hosting, you know, the back end for this, right? Is that kind of how it works? It's not going to be obviously it's not going to be centralized to Google. It's like kind of a shared thing. I don't know exactly how the technical details of RCS work. So
yeah, the carriers will either they'll all have their own servers that talk together, or which is more likely than them having like one server for all four carriers, that kind of thing. It's like with a form implementation,
right? And
they just talk.
Let's talk about a couple different like narratives around this. So one of the things that I've seen commented a lot, so we already knew, I was kind of surprised whenever, so Google's been trying to push this RCS chat thing for a really long time. And then was it earlier this year, they announced that for some carriers, some phones on some carriers in Europe, Google was just going to push RCS, right? And I mean, I know Ardillon, for example, got RCS officially before a lot of us, because he was part of that rollout where Google was actually enabling it on people's phones, despite the fact
that carriers and
handling it. But they didn't do that here. And I guess this is the one of the things that I see people saying is, okay, so if Google could have done this the whole time, if they could have just enabled RCS on every single Android phone, and why didn't they do that, Abner?
They didn't do that because they don't want to piss off their carrier partners, one. Two, they don't want regulators around the world breathing down on them for forcing a centralized communication system. Look at what
billions
of people. Look at what the EU is doing. The EU is actively investigating iMessage right now for their automatically enabling it on iPhone devices, and Google does not want that optics.
Yes.
So no, they cannot. Just
and also, I think another thing to say is that if Google did that, it would not be altogether different. It wouldn't be that much different from Google just launching another messaging app.
Yes,
Google controls everything, which is like, that's not what Google or we want. We don't want just another messaging app that people have the option to use or not use. And so I guess the thing is, you know, like, you know, when you can't just push this to every single phone.
No.
And I think that you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about like the carrier relationship and the carrier partners. Google doesn't want this. They want the carriers to do this. And to me, it seemed like them enabling this on some phones in some countries on some carriers in Europe was kind of Google poking the carriers a little bit You know, they could do that without causing any issues for themselves, you know, without having to run the service themselves and without having, you know, without the regulatory concerns and without really pissing anyone off. They were kind of able to just poke the carriers. And the way I tweeted it out, a week ago or something was like, you know, Google's telling the the carriers, hey, we should do this RCS thing and let's all get together and let's do it right. And then the carriers were like, no, we're good. And then carriers like, well, if you don't do it, we're going to do it for you. You know, it's like it's kind of just like prodding them. And then, you know, and then we saw, you know, all the carriers finally announced that they're going to do it for real, and not only do it for real, but they're going to launch some kind of app of their own, which that's so ridiculous.
It is.
But yeah, for now, if you manage to enable it, is it still enableable?
Yeah, it's still enableable.
So you can turn on RCS on your Android phone right now. And I guess the question and the conspiracy is, one, did Google leak this? Did Google leak the fact that you could do this? Two, I guess even more so, prod the carriers into doing something about RCS? or I guess the second thing is why haven't they turned it off?
Yes.
Obviously, Google has control over who has access to these Jibe servers.
Yeah.
So, why have they allowed this to go on? This is clearly a sandbox or intended to be a sandbox environment. So why?
It happened on the weekend. And I'm sure if you see 100 millions of new users, you're panicking to figure out what the heck went wrong.
Yeah.
And there was no indication of that. There's no panic. Google has not commented on what the heck this is. They really have not commented. And it's just hanging there.
Yep. And also the people that they've used, I don't want to use the word mouthpiece because it's negative connotation, but the people they've used as a mouthpiece, specifically Dieter at The Verge, who's been kind of like the primary expert messenger. And he's the messenger and the expert for the things that are going on with RCS and Google specifically. He has had nothing on this, which is notable too. Dieter's had nothing to say on this.
And he's the one who revealed that there was an Android app, that these carriers are making their own app.
And he was the one that originally unveiled the, I think Google partnered with him to announce the RCS chat initiative.
Yes.
So that's telling that, I don't know. Does he know something that we don't know, that Google is quietly sanctioning this but doesn't want to talk about it? Or I don't know. It's weird. It's really, really weird. But I have a feeling that something has to happen, right? Like, if the carriers are going to announce or going to push out RCS in the next year, is Google just going to let this run until then? I don't think so. I think maybe it's going to get shut off, or maybe it's going to become officially endorsed in some way. I don't know. Maybe Google was planning to announce the rollout of this. You know, I don't know. Maybe they said, screw the regulators, let's just do it. And this was just one of the ways that people have been able to get access to it early. I mean, that would make sense to me, is if, what if Dieter or someone has an embargo about this going live and being available to everyone, or some kind of, you know, story in that regard in the works. And then this happened and it's like, this is going to be official next week. We just can't announce it yet. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's, that might be an option here, is that Google's going to surprise everyone and just announce this and just make it official. I don't know. And I guess they can use, hey, we tried really hard with the carriers for years as kind of their defense, which that to me sounds like a pretty decent defense on this.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of forcing billions of people to use a singular application.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's...
It's very odd. It's so strange. So strange.
So let's talk about Pixel 4 a little bit before we sign off. We did our reviews this week. So yay, we had reviews. Secondly, let's talk about, I guess, the fact that we don't really recommend the smaller Pixel 4.
Yeah, which is...
That's kind of our broad takeaway. So, I mean, we're not the only ones that feel that way. But yeah, seems like the Pixel 4 is battery life is a little bit of a deal breaker. The Pixel 4 XL, we were a little bit more optimistic about. Definitely, both of these are definitely the best Pixels that have existed, I guess. The Pixel 4's battery life may be slightly worse than last year, but overall, I think the Pixel 4, a smaller one, is very comparable to last year, but just better in every other way. Larger Pixel 4 XL is obviously the best Pixel yet. The question, though, and we'll leave the show on this note, is, and this, I guess we can have a little mini conversation about this, is at the current price levels for the current, you know, for Pixel 4 XL, you know, how easily can we recommend this to most people? And let's compare it first to the crop of Android phones. And I think really the only two contenders on that front would be the OnePlus 7 Pro / 7T is an obvious alternative. And then the Samsung Galaxy S10, right?
Called S10e.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it, right? Like,
yeah.
So yeah. On the Android side of things, you pretty much get a lot of the benefit. And basically, I mean, pretty much most of, you know, the best parts of the Pixel 4 XL with, you know, less of the camera prowess in a package that's almost half the price with the OnePlus 7 Pro, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, similar story with the Galaxy S10. And especially since the Galaxy phones do not keep the resale value at all. So you can find a used Galaxy S10 for pretty cheap at this point. Or even a new one. I think there's plenty of deals going on, especially, you know, coming Black Friday and stuff like that. Really, the story this year is, I think the overarching story, and maybe you disagree with this, but I think the overarching story is Google has lost the lead in cameras.
Yes. Or sorry. Enough. Or just, yeah, they lost the lead by the fact that everybody got to the same price they are.
Yes. And yeah. Yes. Google has been leaning on the camera prowess since day one. And at day one, it was a significant selling point. The first Pixel, even the second Pixel, it was, you know, this is night and day. You can buy a crap camera in any other phone, or you can buy a good camera in the Pixel. And that was the number one reason to say, hey, cameras, photos, those you have to live with your whole life. You can't ever go back and take them again, you know? And so just from that standpoint, the Pixel, even if it had other trade-offs, seemed like a compelling package. And I guess the story this year is Pixel 4 XL has all of the greatness of every other XL Pixel, all of the great things, everything is made better. And the camera is just as good and better than last year. But the problem is everyone else is caught up. And by everyone else, I mean Apple. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of the overarching issue that Google has this year, is that it's harder to say, yes, the $899 price tag is worth it, because previously we were able to justify the higher price because pictures are priceless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unlimited storage and original quality is also pretty priceless, because that could be pretty expensive if you were to pay for it. Yeah, and this year, just not the case.
Not the case.
And even then, I mean, the iPhone 11 is $699, $200 cheaper, and you get a camera that's pretty much, for all intents and purposes, identical. It's obviously doesn't have some of the little things, like the bits and bobs, like astrophotography. But overall, you get a very comparable experience at $200 cheaper. And none of the minor drawbacks of owning a Pixel device. And the OnePlus 7 Pro is like, you know, a solid phone, hardware-wise. And software-wise, it's literally only bested. The only phone that's better than the OnePlus 7 Pro software-wise is Pixel 4 XL, in my opinion. And so it's just tough. It's just tough. And I guess the question will become, how's this going to look on Black Friday?
Yeah, that'll be a real indicator of... That'll be a rough indicator of how well it's selling, isn't it? And that's going to be fun.
Maybe even before then, we'll see buy one, get one half off.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, it's feeling a lot like last year, but this time we know what's happening behind the scenes, or we can extrapolate.
Mm-hmm.
And, oof, that's not the... not a good track record, is it?
Nope. It's not.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps the show for us this week. I don't think there's much else we need to talk about in Pixel 4. Nope. You reviewed the Google Assistant, which is the first time we've done that.
Yes.
And your take on that, you share that, I guess, before we close the show out. But basically, your take was it's kind of subtle, and that's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah. So I really like how Assistant looks right now. They've iterated, and I think they've come to a very good place with this light bar at the bottom of the screen, with this transparent UI, that kind of thing. It's very subtle. It gets out of the way, and that's the future. That's how Google wants you to think about the system going forward. And the other subtlety is that it doesn't do a lot. There are very key areas, a few apps where everything that Google demoed on stage works, and those things work very well. But as is with all technology, once something works, your expectation grows exponentially, and you want to do all those high level features in everything and anything, and you just can't do that right now. Mm-hmm. Assistant is very good in specific use cases, like finding and sending pictures, and just basically using Google Assistant to find information that's hard to find, like flight details. That's what the new Google Assistant on the Pixel 4 is very good at, and that's it, fortunately.
Yep. Well, hopefully, future Pixels, we'll see the new Google Assistant. I'd like to see the Envision that they pitched at Google I.O. come to fruition to see if that's actually worthwhile.
I want to compose email.
Phone control. Yeah. Compose email. Yeah. Open Gmail. Compose email. Send to Appner.
Yeah.
Hey, what's
that's
up?
That's cool.
Send. That would be very convenient.
Now imagine on a Pixelbook.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And everything else. Imagine on a fitness tracker.
Oh man, I can't even.
Well, that wraps the show for this week. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast on Fridays or Wednesdays or Thursdays, depending on the week. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. Thanks for listening to us rant about Fitbit and Wear OS for 45 minutes. Hopefully, we will never do that ever again, but... we will be talking more about it in the future. And until then, you can tune in here every week, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in, Abner, and joining me, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.